The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Friday, December 31st, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports I Own College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, daydreaming about five slices of pizza. Look at the metabolism on that guy. Look at his metabolism.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Before we preview the weekend with the Final Four and one, I did want to look back at the previous couple of nights because there were some, not a lot, but some interesting developments. The most interesting of which I think came inside Auburn Arena. It was final score, Bruce Pearl's Auburn Tigers 70, Will Wade's LSU Tigers 55. Walker Kessler, a young man some predicted in the preseason, and by some, I mean I, predicted in the preseason would be a breakout star of college basketball. He finished with 16 points, 10 rebounds, and 11 blocked shots. Triple-double, just the second in Auburn history. Deadleg, where were you and your family when Walker Kessler finally broke out? Do you suspect you'll remember it forever?
No, I'll remember it for at least a couple of months, but a year from now, and I'm not certain that I'm going to be.
I'm going to remember it forever.
I know that. That's why we're leading with this. He's been awesome, man. It was the first triple-double with at least 11 blocks since 2018 in all of college basketball, and he's just the third Power Conference player. Trivia time.
Okay.
Good morning to YouTube, by the way. We got a happy 22. We have an Australian listener listening after midnight. Someone's listening to us from the year 2022 right now live. I know a lot of people are going to actually listen to us when it's 2022. But
that's Sam Bassini. What's up, Sam?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, an impromptu trivia time here. I don't know the name of the other one, but I know at least one of them. So if you get the other one, I'm going to have to research it real quick. Can you name one of the other two Power Conference players in the past decade to get a triple-double with at least 11 blocks?
Taco Fall?
Not Taco Fall.
Herb Pope?
Not Herb Pope. Big 12.
Big 12, 11 blocks. Oh, that was clearly...
Triple-double.
Yeah. That was clearly Silvio D'Souza.
No, it was one Jeff Withey was in 2012. Jeff Withey. So the point is what Walker Kessler did on Wednesday night when Auburn had an extremely impressive win over an LSU team who, by the way, played its first game against a top 50 KenPom opponent. And its first game on the road in a true road environment. LSU didn't fare so well in its biggest test so far this season. Kessler was awesome, and he was the star of the game. And in fact, in the power rankings, I've got Auburn top 10. I had in the past four games, Kessler's averaging 6.8 blocks. He's actually blossoming into, truly, at this stage, I mean, and how he's being used, he's blossoming into one of the best big men in the country, which is a really good thing for Auburn because, oh, by the way, very well could have a top three 2022 NBA pick on its roster in Jabari Smith, who was almost casual with 16 points. So, good developments for Bruce Pearl's team, which at this point, as I said in the power rankings, Auburn is a viable Final Four contender at this point. I don't think there's any denying it when you look at the record, how they've played, who they've beaten, and the advancements on that roster. It's good signs all around for that team.
I give you the option. I put them both on the table. You can take one of them. Do you want the front court of Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren? Or Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler?
I will still take Drew Timmy and Chet Holmgren, but that is a question I could not have possibly imagined being a realistic one when we started this season. But still, give me Timmy and Chet, but it's a pretty close one. What about you?
Yeah, I think I'd still probably go Timmy and Chet, but, I mean, it is close. I mean, Jabari has been awesome. And like you said, is now a legitimate candidate to be the first pick in the 2022 NBA draft. I don't know that he will be. I mean, it could still be Chet Holmgren. It could be Paolo Banchero. I doubt it's anybody other than one of those two, if not Jabari Smith. But Jabari has elevated himself into that conversation. It's not like he came out of nowhere. He's a consensus top 10 player in the country in his high school class. McDonald's All-American, son of a former NBA player, all of that stuff. But people weren't talking about him as a potential number one overall pick, but they clearly are now. He's averaging 16.2 points, 6.9 rebounds, and shooting 42.9% from three on 5.4 attempts per game. This is a 6'10", like, real player who is launching from three and making them at a really impressive rate. So, like, that's all the stuff that NBA people want to see. Oh, 6'10", can move really well and consistently knock down that shot. Yeah, that's the way you make like $200 million someday. So he's been fantastic. They got Alan Flanagan back. Auburn has. He's played two games now. Easing back into the rotation. Only 12 minutes against Murray State. 29 against LSU. And then against LSU, he had, I think it's 4 of 8 from the field. 10.6 rebounds. So he's getting comfortable. And then Kessler, as predicted, is breaking through. I remember on the podcast in the off season, I mentioned that, you know, he didn't play much last season at Carolina because he got called the numbers game. You know, they had Armando Bacot, Garrison Brooks, De'Ron Sharp. So everybody, you know, North Carolina had at least, and this is wild to think about, but Carolina had at least three bigs, like traditional bigs, who were either older or better. And so he only played 8.8 minutes per game. But one of the things I pointed out is that when he played, he produced. He only played at least 20 minutes twice last season. But in those games, he averaged 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 blocks. And you'd sort of chuckled because you were like, it's a small sample size. Who's chuckling now, dead leg? Who's chuckling now?
I guess I still am. It's really, hey, listen, it's wonderful to see. And if you watch that game against LSU, like, he's figured it out, man. They've got it absolutely rolling there.
And the arena, like the arena, I went and looked this up the other this morning. I was gonna say the other day, like I was prepping for this 7 days ago. That arena is awesome, and when it's filled up, it's a tremendous atmosphere. You know, it was built about 10 years ago, and it only holds like 9,000, which is perfect. Every college basketball arena should hold like no more than 9,000 people. Except for Kansas and Kentucky.
Yeah, a couple of them. You know, Kansas holds, off the top of my head, I feel like Kansas holds like 17. But, and that's, it's like the perfect size. Maybe it's not that big, but
it's big though.
Yeah, it's big, but it's intimate. It works well. But most college arenas should max out at 10 because you've got a really good environment, intimacy there. And more often than not, you know, a lot of these games with arenas that are just too big, they just can't fill up. It's not a good vibe. Even you know, Carolina, when it's not playing a premier non-conference or conference opponent, will sometimes struggle filling the humongous Dean Dome, which when it's filled is amazing. But I agree. Auburn size. Baylor's getting a new arena in a couple of years. That's going to be like 7 and change.
Right. That's great.
But I love it. I can't wait to see what that actually looks like in practice, in games, once we actually get to it's going to make the ticket hard. It's going to make it more of an event kind of feel. So I get with what you're saying there. It came across – visually, it came across pretty well on TV the other night. And yeah, it looks like they've really got they've got something going there. Would you take, you might have been going off on another tangent here, so feel free to circle back. But real quick, as we flipped 2022 here, neither of us had Auburn winning the SEC in the preseason. It's now clearly in the mix there. Would that be your updated pick? I'm still sticking with Alabama, who we'll get to in just a second. I'll still stick with Bama to win the SEC, but I'm just kind of wondering what your temperature take is.
I mean, you know, we're now about 8 weeks into the season, and Auburn is the highest ranked SEC team in the top 25 and one. So they've certainly been the most impressive to date. I mean, the only loss is a double overtime loss to UConn day before Thanksgiving. I mean, they could be easily.
That was a really good game too. Yeah.
Right. I mean, they could easily be undefeated right now. So, I mean, you know, I'm not going to switch up my picks to win everything every week. But yeah, if you told me, hey, you got to take $100,000 and bet it on one team to win the SEC, I think the smart pick is probably Auburn at this point. I mean, they've got Kessler playing at a high level, Jabari Smith looking like, you know, a top three pick in the draft. Alan Flanagan is back. They've got an incredible home court advantage. They've got an accomplished coach. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to like. And for whatever it's worth, KenPom now projects them to go 14-4 in the SEC and win the league by multiple games. So, you know, would I feel good about Auburn winning the SEC outright by multiple games? No, but I just think there's too many other good teams. There's too many teams that could win that league. Kentucky can win it. Alabama can win it. Arkansas just took a questionable loss, but it's still Arkansas. I think they're going to be good. There's a lot of candidates to win that league, so I wouldn't feel great about anybody winning it by multiple games. But again, for whatever it's worth, KenPom has Auburn winning the SEC by multiple games.
The other Power Conference player, for anyone listening and wondering, is Arizona State's Jordan Pachinski. And in 2012 against Cal State Northridge, he had 13 points, 12 blocks, 12 rebounds. Jeff Withey did it against San Jose State in 2012. Walker Kessler did his against a Power Conference opponent. So good on Walker Kessler. Good on Auburn.
Did you see this little fact? And then we'll move on in the game. I just thought it was interesting. In the win over LSU, Walker Kessler blocked three LSU shots before LSU made one shot.
Oh, I did not see that.
Which is just ridiculous.
It was ridiculous. And keep an eye on Auburn going forward. Okay, real quick, before we get to previewing the weekend, kind of a tour around the sport. Games of note that happened previously. So first of all, Providence wins against Seton Hall. And Providence now, where do you have them ranked in your top 25 and one?
I think I moved them up to 16, maybe.
Yeah, they're definitely a top 20 team. And there's no argument at this point. They still are not swaying the metrics to this level. They were at the last net ranking. Providence was 29th. Providence has 5 quad one wins. No one else in America has more than 3. And even teams like
What about outside of America?
No one outside of America has 5 quad one wins. I promise you.
That's interesting.
No one else in this universe. Providence right now is the only team in the universe, in the known universe. I'm not going to account for alternate universes. We've already talked about this before. Can't get down that rabbit hole there, but
I get so confused when you start talking about that. It doesn't even make sense in my little simple head.
Oh man. Alt versus, very interesting stuff here, but we'll save that for another time. Gonzaga 3-2 against quad one. Auburn, who we just talked about, 3-1 against quad one. Duke 3-1. Purdue is undefeated in quad one games. And again, we're early here. It's December 31st, New Year's Eve. Hello. But Purdue 3-0.
We're as late as you can get. It's December 31st
in the calendar year. Yes, but in the basketball season, that's too not early. Early. But you know,
too
we're
early. Let me ask you this real quick for me and the listeners.
Yeah,
what is the best website to go to look at quad one wins and compare them all? Where do you go? What are you looking at right now?
I am looking at warrennolan.com.
That's where I go to.
That's just the easiest one to filter it automatically. Is that where you go, or did you need the website, Gary?
Baby, I got Warren Nolan bookmarked right now.
Okay.
Got all sorts of things bookmarked.
You've got KenPom.
Yep.
You've got your top 70 Big Bang challenges of 2021.
Yes.
You've got Bart Torvik sorted without the preseason bias.
Yep.
And then you've got Warren Nolan.
Here's what I've got in some basketball bookmarks. I'll read it straight down. Tell me what I'm missing. I've got KenPom, followed by net rankings, followed by strength of record, followed by Warren Nolan, followed by Sagarin ratings, followed by Torvik, tempo free stats, hoop math.
Hoop math. Look at my guy.
I got hoop math.
Wow.
I got hoop math bookmarked. I'm not playing around anymore. I think you think I'm playing around sometimes. I'm not playing around anymore.
True story. This is like 2012, maybe 2013. I swear to you, this is true because I've never forgotten it since. And you'd have to be a long time listener to remember this. But there was once an episode for about 10 minutes when I was hosting and I had Parrish and one Jeff, and you two outright mocked me for referencing KenPom as much as I did. You mocked me. And now look how far you've come. It happened, my man.
Now I get mocked.
It happened. And now I'm just like, you know, can we ease off? Can we keep the KenPom references to like under 12 in an episode? Can we?
Well,
just
I thought it was understood that Ken always knew I was crediting him. I think he should charge $500 annual fee for his service. Like the idea that he only charges 20 bucks is crazy.
Again, we had some serious blowback from people being like, dude, like don't give him any ideas.
I want to give him ideas. I want to give Ken Pomeroy ideas. And so I thought he always knew, like, of course GP's credited me. And I think he does, but then like everybody started using his numbers, but without attribution. Mm-hmm. And then he popped on Twitter and started banging heads one day. So I was like, well, I'm not going to get my head banged by Ken Pomeroy. I'm going to credit him every time. Ken Pom, Ken Pom, Ken Pom.
And you do. Providence is 12-1, 5-0 in quad one games. It is 3-1 in quad three games. Yes, believe it or not, losing to the Virginia Cavaliers on a neutral floor right now qualifies as a quad three loss. But Providence looking really, really good. They were able to be, albeit a shorthanded Seton Hall team, and it was a home win at the Dunk for PC. Its first game between two ranked teams in that building since 2016 when Providence made the tournament that year, and they started they started really good. Maybe they also might have been 14-1 when they started that season. They had Chris Dunn, Ben Bentel on that team. And so, yeah, just wanted to give a little bit of love to the Friars here. They've been consistently getting love in the power rankings. There's no reason for me to believe this team isn't going to the tournament, and that wasn't the case in the preseason. So right now, and we'll talk Nova and Seton Hall a little bit when we preview the weekend here, but when you look across the Big East, even though Providence doesn't rank highly yet, give it a couple more weeks to think of some wins. I think you're going to really see them start to scoot up. You know, PC's 12-1. It's the best record of any team in the Big East. And then, you know, Nova's got an urgent game this weekend. Xavier is not that far behind. They're 11-2, but they're coming off a loss to Villanova. UConn's 10-3. It's on a pause. Dan Herling from COVID-19. I think he actually kind of got hit by it badly. So hopefully Dan's feeling better and on the mend, and then UConn can get back on the floor soon. We're at more than 100 plus pauses right now, by the way. Gonzaga being the most notable one as we record in the past, say, 20 hours. Gonzaga is not going to play Loyola Marymount on Saturday as scheduled. And I believe its game against San Francisco is actually in doubt, and that's next Thursday. So the numbers keep climbing. Hopefully that number, you know, comes with less, you know, consistency as we go forward. But anyway, good on PC. Any thoughts on the Big East before or Providence before I mention the other games of note here?
I know everything about Providence.
I know you. I know you. They find you.
I haven't heard from my lesbian artist lately.
Okay. The Providence fan. Okay.
Oh yeah, she hates KenPom just way more than she hates me. You do a Twitter search. I can't remember the name, but I just noticed she tagged me and KenPom in the same one, or maybe it was separate, but I saw it because I got intrigued by her art. I was just scrolling through, you know, taking it all in, and she had tweeted at Ken Pomeroy. She called him she said something about his algorithms, and then it was like, you're so effing stupid. She's so mad about Ken about how his algorithm is treating the Providence Friars so early this season. So Ken and I have a common enemy, although I do not consider an enemy. I consider her an artist. Well,
a foil. Let's go with that. Elsewhere in the SEC, Alabama beat Tennessee on Wednesday. Just want to give the Tide some love here. Tide have three wins over top 10 net teams, or at least they did at the time when they beat Tennessee there. They didn't shoot well at all. In fact, they needed a run late. They outscored Tennessee by 11 points down the stretch. But Alabama had one of its worst three-point outings since Nate Oates became the coach. But Noah Gurley had a huge game, and that was a good win for the Tide. You know, Tennessee on the road, they did not have Kennedy Chandler or John Fulkerson. They played a heck of a game, to be honest with you. And then just down the stretch, Alabama just got the buckets needed. Noah Gurley, again, Furman transfer, he came up real big, had 20-10. So just credit to Alabama. And again, just as I wrote in the power rankings, it just reinforces how good the top third of that league is going to be. I think we'll be talking about the SEC race basically on a weekly basis on this pod for the remainder of the season, because there's just going to be that many relevant teams playing good games, playing relevant games there. So keep an eye on that. And then the other one I wanted to mention was what happened on Thursday night. Watched the majority of the game, and we led a podcast or two with this already, but at this point, it's a 7-5 team. I mean, Michigan goes on the road and loses against UCF 85-71. Now, credit to UCF. It's now 9-2. Johnny Dawkins appears to have his best team since the one that almost beat Duke and Zion Williamson in the tournament, and that's obviously a good win for the American. But at the same time, Michigan just cannot get it together. It is yet to win three consecutive games this season. And it was, I get it. It's on the road. You're not guaranteed that kind of win. I applaud Juwan Howard for scheduling like he had a preseason top five team. But I bring up the game, Parrish, because I think big picture, Michigan, like, it's in some trouble here. Credit again, Darren Green, Brandon Mahan, they were awesome for UCF. They combined for, I think, 53 points. They were really good. And if you're a UCF fan, you're probably riding high right now because your school is eventually going to the Big 12. And you might actually wind up being a real factor in the American here and maybe getting that league to a position where maybe it can be a three-bid league. But Michigan's the story. At this point, it's a bubble team, and it's going to have opportunities, obviously, in the Big Ten. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know. Like, I just did not – I could not have possibly envisioned a scenario in the preseason where we would be talking about the Wolverines being in that, you know, bubble territory. But that's where they are. Right now, 42nd in the net. 0-4 in quad one opportunities, 1-1 in quad two. It's a bad situation. They will have plenty of opportunities, but I think about 2 weeks ago, you asked me, is it time to panic if you're a Michigan fan? I said, no. I think it kind of borderline is here. UCF ran away from the Wolverines on Thursday night. And so, yeah, there's some real concern there. And so with that, oh, by the way, even though the Big Ten's still plenty good, the Big Ten's just not quite as good at the top without Michigan being the team we thought it was.
Yeah. I mean, dude, anybody can slip up and lose a game here or there. They're just getting beat almost every time they play a good team. I mean, they lost at home to Seton Hall, and we were like, okay, it's early. And then they, you know, lost a neutral court game to Arizona. And we were like, hey, but Arizona, you know, might be pretty good. And Arizona is pretty good. Then they get blasted at North Carolina. North Carolina gets blasted by everybody else. Double digits at home, lost to Minnesota. First-year coach? It's not supposed to happen. And then you go play UCF, and UCF might be better than we think, but they haven't done a lot.
It just wasn't competitive. I'm just saying, right. Like, anyone listening that watched that game, it was an authoritative win for UCF, which, again, is good for UCF, but it's like, Michigan, what the hell are we doing here?
Right. And now you got to go to Rutgers. You win in there? You can't win at UCF? You win in at Rutgers?
You might be able to win a Jersey Mike's. If it was the Rack, it's a different situation. We have to take these things into account.
Well, I mean, look at this, what they got coming up. It's at Rutgers. They'll be underdogs, or will they? No, they'll be favored. They'll be favored to win that game.
At Rutgers?
Yeah.
Michigan?
Yeah.
Should they be?
I don't know, but they will be. All right. Okay, let's give them that, all right? They go to 8-5. Now you got Michigan State at home.
Hmm.
I mean, we'll see, but like right now, it's clear one team's better than the other.
Possible, yeah, but we'll see.
Let's give them a loss there. 8-6. Now, Purdue at home? He ain't done nothing to make me think you're beating Purdue.
Nope.
8-7, and then at Illinois. They could really start 8-8. They could be 8-8 through the first 16 games.
I'm telling you, if Michigan's 8-8 after six, again, we got to live in this world. And if they're play the schedule and Michigan's 8-8, they're going to need to tear through February to have an at-large case again. So it's just, if you say you got to pick one or the other, I'm saying Michigan's going to the NCAA tournament. It'll be one of the 68, but I did not think it just, I told you 3 weeks ago, this was the pointing team in the country because with Memphis, there was reason to have some skepticism, even though they were preseason top 10 in the eyes of most. Michigan, there was no reason. This is the most disappointing team, I think, undeniably at this point. I know Memphis just lost at Tulane. It didn't have half its damn roster there. So it's a bad loss, but it's still relatively understandable. It's still Michigan for me, man. That is just, it's a bit vexing there. And the players they had coming into the roster this season, they just haven't been producing the way that was expected.
We ready to move on to the final 4-1?
Let's rock.
We got a pretty good weekend of college basketball on tap. If the games get played. Fingers crossed. We'll do the final 4-1 next, but first, check this out. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
So we got a pretty good weekend of college basketball on tap, provided the games get played. Great opportunity for me to hold on to my lead in the final 4-1. Deadleg, what's my lead now? Am I up 3 games or 4-7? What's my lead? Nada, what's it? Update us on the records.
Well, GP, you actually went 3-1.
He sounds like God talking to us, doesn't he?
You went 3-1, but you went 3-1 the last time we played this.
Okay.
You're still under 500, but you're getting better. You're getting better. It's 9-15 for you. Nortlander is 18-11 right now.
9-15.
What's my record again, Nada?
That would be 18-11.
All right. Sounds good. We are definitely not professionals. Maybe take this in mind.
I'm a professional.
If you want to fade Parrish, by all means do so. Let's roll.
Game one, Saturday, noon Eastern. West Virginia at number 17, Texas, inside the Booby Gibson Center. KenPom has it, Texas -7. You can watch it on ESPNU.
Trivia time.
Oh, wow.
Within one. Listen, I will know you read the power rankings if you get this right.
Oh,
but
God.
You didn't, so we'll see. And that's fine. How many? You got to get it within one. So you either hit the number or you're one over or one fewer. How many wins does Bob Huggins have all time against Chris Beard? And people in the live chat, take a stab at it. If you read the power rankings, you know the answer.
How many wins does Bob Huggins have against Chris Beard?
Yeah. How many wins does Bob Huggins have against Chris Beard?
Two.
Is that your final answer?
Yep.
All right. I'll just let a couple more seconds go by. People want to play along at home? The answer is not two. Bob Huggins is 7-5 all time against Chris Beard. All 12 meetings happened when Beard was at Texas Tech. So he is above 500. I only bring that up because when I did the power ranks, I thought, I bet you Chris Beard has a winning record against Bob Huggins. And I was wrong. And so, yeah, Bob Huggins does have a winning record here. West Virginia is, you could make the case that West Virginia is the ultimate combination at this point in the season of the team with the best record that's gotten the least amount of discussion around the sport, because there just hasn't been a ton to talk about with West Virginia yet. But this is an 11-1 team. Its best wins have come against Clemson, UConn, and they actually got a nice road win against UAB 2 weeks ago. So let's give a little bit of a chatter to the Mountaineers here. Bob Huggins has been able to ride his Taz Sherman, who was expected to be, you know, t- top 10 level kind of player in the Big 12. He certainly has been that. Sean McNeil, again, a reliable perimeter threat. So it's those two above all others, although Malik Curry has been, he's been an important veteran on this team this season as well. So I think there's a really good chance this could be a great game. This will be, do you remember the, you, I don't know, when I mentioned this, you're going to remember it, but the last time Chris Beard was in a home game against Bob Huggins, do you remember what happened?
Silvio D'Souza almost punched somebody. Oh. No.
Last season, Beard gets ejected, sits on the court in protest.
And then goes and shakes Hug's hand?
And then he actually gives him a fist bump. But yeah, Beard sits cross-legged. He's losing his mind. And then Beard, he's, you know, he really doesn't take himself too seriously at all. And then, and like Huggins is just kind of standing there and just kind of like stone face, gives Beard the fist bump, and then Beard walks off. So,
the way I remember that is that Chris was fired up and ejected, but still had enough about him to say, that's Hugs. I'm not walking out of here without telling Hugs what's up.
That's right. It was a great moment. And it was a Beard. I'd never seen him that out of his gourd before, but hopefully we don't have an ejection. If we do, it has to one up that one. You said
I want an ejection.
You said the line was 7.
That's what KenPom said.
Give me West Virginia to cover here. It's been a good team. Texas is certainly capable. I've been flirting with putting Texas in the power ranks. I haven't done it yet. I just don't have the win to validate it. I can't get myself there. Longhorns fans, if your team does win this game, I'm going to put them in next week's edition of the Hey 19. But I think UT wins, but West Virginia keeps it close. This is a fun one. Give me WVU.
On this, just only because this just popped into my head, I hope everybody can make note of this. I'm about to help everybody in the entire world with something. Everybody who talks about college basketball, writes about college basketball, tweets about college basketball. You ready for this?
What did I do?
No, you did nothing.
All right.
Bob Huggins, if you don't want to call him Bob Bob Huggins, you call him Hugs.
He ain't Huggy Bear.
Nobody calls him Huggy Bear. Nobody. Nobody who knows Bob Huggins calls him Huggy Bear. Nobody.
Can you imagine walking up to can you imagine even walking up to Bob Huggins and daring to say those two words to his face?
I hear it all the time and I see it all the time. Ooh, great win for Huggy Bear. Nobody calls him that. That's not his name or his nickname. Bob Huggins is either Bob or Bob Huggins, or more appropriately, or at least more often, more frequently, he's Hugs. Every friend he's got calls him Hugs. If you call Andy Kennedy and say, who did you used to work for at Cincinnati? He'll say Hugs. Everybody says Hugs. Stop it with the Huggy Bear stuff. It drives me crazy. And if it drives me crazy, it must drive Bob Huggins crazy.
Yeah.
Like you said, West Virginia's 11-1, but like the wins are, I mean, at UAB, that's a real win, but it's like, you know, it's a real win, but it's not, it is what it is.
UConn's a real win.
Shorthanded UConn.
Okay, they got the look at you trying. You're trying to take down Hugs right now. How dare you?
I feel like UConn's been shorthanded the entire year.
You're right about that. I feel the same way.
Yeah, they've been missing like it feels like multiple key players all year. So there's nothing great with West Virginia in the win department. Some good stuff, but nothing great. And then they lost to Marquette by double digits. So that's how. You know, I get asked every once in a while, like, West Virginia's 11-1. Why don't you have them ranked? They haven't done anything worthy of launching into the top 25-1 yet. But winning at Texas will almost certainly, definitely. Winning at Texas will change it. I'll go ahead and put that on the record. They're only 42nd at KenPom, West Virginia is. But they are 16th in strength of record, which I would not have guessed that. Except, like, you know, they've won 11 of their 12 games, so maybe their record is strong. You mentioned Taz Sherman. He's having a big-time junior season, like All-American-level stuff. If West Virginia can, you know, become a top 20, top 15 team, he looks like an All-American caliber player. And then on the other side, we talked about Texas in the preseason. I believed in them, but I was like, I don't know who their best player is going to be. I don't know how good they're going to be. I think they're going to be good, but, it wouldn't surprise me if it's a bit of a – you know, got a lot of talented players, but doesn't quite work for whatever reason. They're sitting here 10-2 right now. I still have no idea if this team is good. I mean, I know it's good. I think it's good. I don't know if it's potentially great. Mm-hmm. 10-2, but the best win's over Stanford, so no good wins. But they also have no bad losses. You know, the losses are to, what, at Gonzaga and at Seton Hall. So two road losses to legitimate, you know, top 25 caliber teams. They've done nothing to make you go, I don't think they're good. But they've done nothing to make you go, oh, boy, they're great. And, oh, by the way, Timmy Allen is their leading scorer and rebounder. I don't know if many people predicted that in the preseason. He's a transfer from Utah. And then trivia time.
Lay it on me.
How many Texas players are currently averaging more points per game than Marcus Carr?
That's a good one. He has not been. I'm going to answer this, but quick diatribe, man. It feels like every single offseason for the past 5 or 6 years, there's 3 to 5 transfers that get a ton of pub. Maybe even like 2 or 3 that get a ton of pub. And at least one of those players just does not match the hype whatsoever. We never learn our lesson. Carr is that right now. I'll say Carr is the 5th leading scorer on this Texas team.
You son of a...
Come on, knock it down. I don't have the soundboard ready, but yes, knock it down. Knock it down.
He is UT's 5th leading scorer, averaging 8.4 points per game. He has averaged double digits in each of the previous 3 seasons, and he averaged 19.4 points last season at Minnesota. Now, just 8.4 points per game, shooting a career-low 38.4% from the field and a career-low 31.7% from 3. He hasn't been good.
Nope, hasn't been good at all.
I got to pick the game, huh?
Yeah, that's how this works.
Damn. I'll take West Virginia the points. I think Texas wins the game, but I'll trust Hugs. I'll trust Hugs and his team to keep it within 7. Game 2, Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Ooh, boy. Number 1, Baylor at number 8, Iowa State. Number 8, let me do that again. Game 2, Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Number 1, Baylor at number 8, Iowa State, inside Craig Bracken's Coliseum. KenPom has it Baylor -7. You can watch it on ESPNU.
Craig, you and Craig Brackens.
Love Craig Brackens.
I was thinking maybe a little. Call it Marcus Fizer Court. How about this? How about Craig this? For a little, yeah, I know that. How about this? First of all, for anyone that might have missed that in our crosstalk, what channel is this? What channel is the game of the weekend on?
ESPNU. It's New Year's Day. Football everywhere.
That's correct. So, but hey, at least it's on something. And no one anticipated this game would be. I bet you this was originally like an ESPN Plus game, and then they upgraded it like 2 weeks ago.
This was originally. I actually looked this up. This was originally on the Pac-12 Network.
Oh, okay.
They were going to play Baylor, Iowa State on the Pac-12 Network. Then Baylor is undefeated, ranked number 1. Iowa State goes from a 2-win team to ranked in the top 10, and they said, we got to upgrade this to ESPNU.
How about that?
It's a rough development for the Pac-12 Network.
Given that this is the game of the weekend, and we're losing games left and right, I felt compelled to just reach out to both head coaches on Thursday night and said, are you good to go? Or, like, should we just be prepared? Are we in limbo here? And Scott Drew said, no, we are good. We were great with the vaccination. We are great with our booster situation. We are clear to go. And TJ Altsenberger, Iowa State's coach, said, yeah, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be playing. And we've been fortunate so far, so we are good to go. And so, barring something happening that neither coach sees on the horizon whatsoever, they think that their testing situation has been great. So it's wonderful that we're going to get this game. How about this one? This comes from Iowa State's Sports and Information Department. Shouts to Matt Schultz. This is only the 4th time in the past 40 years where there's been a college basketball game between 2 teams that are 12-0 or better into January.
How about that?
So it's actually, it's not just the game of the weekend. We just normally don't get 2 teams facing off this late in the season that haven't lost a game yet. So that's awesome. By the way, another one of my preseason predictions that went wrong. I said there would be 0 undefeated teams left when we got to January 1st. I feel like the Omicron variant also might have helped with this, but I was destined to be wrong anyway because Baylor wasn't losing no matter what. Baylor was never losing before January 1st, so congrats to the Bears at absolute minimum with that. This is going to be a defensive battle. Iowa State's allowing like 56 points a game. Baylor's top five in offensive and defensive efficiency at KenPom there. TJ Otzelberger at 12-0. It's the best start of any coach in Iowa State history, and it's the second best start for any Big 12 coach in his first season at 12-0. So it's they continue to be a great story, but I went on radio Thursday.
And as so did I.
Okay. All right. Sounds good, dude. I'm just saying, I brought this up on radio that, like, Iowa State's been a fun story. We talked about it on the podcast. It's been like a college basketball story, but people will start to take the Cyclones like seriously as in, oh, this is a team that really has some high end March potential if it can go out and win this game. I know Iowa State fans are extremely excited for this, as you should be. Again, as Parrish mentioned on the previous podcast, didn't win a game in the first half of 2021 and hasn't lost a game since this season started there. That's just a heck of a whiplash there in the best kind of way. But keep an eye on Isaiah Brockington. He's been awesome, reigning co-Big 12 player of the week. He had 20-13 in one of Iowa State's most recent games against Chicago State. He's been terrific. I can't wait to watch this. A part of me does think that Baylor's going to make a dominant statement here, because it's just, you know, we're really going to doubt the Bears in this spot. So I'm going to take Baylor to win and to cover, but I think Iowa State will show well even in not covering. I don't think it's going to be like a dominant blowout, but I think Baylor will just eke out and beat that line.
Sounds like somebody forgot about Hilton Magic.
Okay, what is it? I can't win. It's either I forget about Hilton Magic or I'm disrespectful to every Drew except Drew Timmy. I cannot win except in the picks where I'm winning.
You have to thread that needle. Watch me thread the needle.
Thread it.
I'm about to thread the needle. First off, we did a dribble handoff earlier this week. It took us about 7 hours to figure out what day it runs on, but we got it all figured out.
Got it done.
And the question, as presented by our incredible boss, Marcus Nelson, was, what conference game are you looking most forward to? And I was like, the one this weekend. And I mean that genuinely. Like Kansas Baylor will be awesome. And, you know, Kentucky Auburn will be great. I mean, there's a lot of them. And there's a chance we won't even, you know, even remember this one as anything other than, you know, Iowa State's first loss 2 months from now. But in terms of anticipation, I can't wait for this, because you got the reigning national champ and the number one ranked team going into Craig Bracken's Coliseum, otherwise known as Hilton Coliseum, Hilton Magic back in play. You've got the two teams that are first and second in strength of record as of this moment, both ranked in the top 10. And it's, again, the reigning national champ against the biggest surprise in college basketball. And this is evidence, by the way, if you are a fan of some power conference team and it feels like, God, we got no recruiting class coming, we got no good players coming back, we're struggling right now, when are we going to be good again? What TJ has done at Iowa State this quickly is evidence that because of the one-time transfer waiver and the abundance of players in the transfer portal, you can flip these things overnight. There was pre-transfer waiver, you couldn't take over to win Iowa State and flip it in year one. You just couldn't do it. Like I remember John Calipari got the Kentucky job, and then, like, you know, he just took John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Bledsoe, and he flipped that thing very quickly. Well, that was John Calipari. You know, 99.9% of other coaches aren't going to be able to do that at the power conference level. But now you can. And it's not going to be with the John Walls and DeMarcus Cousins, like the top 10 high school players. It's going to be with a transfer from here and a transfer from there. As we talked about, TJ enrolled five transfers who were either good or okay players somewhere else. And but he's old. He got an older team. And he meshed them together really well. And I don't know if Iowa State is good enough to beat Baylor this weekend. But I do think Iowa State's legitimately good. I do think you're never going to get that figured out, are you?
I gotta unlatch.
The idea that I learned how to eliminate preseason bias before you learned how to eliminate your phone from your MacBook is one of the great developments of 2021. The vaccine would be on that list somewhere too, but also me learning how to remove preseason bias before you learn to remove your phone from your MacBook. It's, you know, we could debate off podcast. We'll debate which one was bigger. I don't know if Iowa State's good enough to beat Baylor tomorrow, but I do think Iowa State's good. Like, legitimately, this is an NCAA tournament team. And what if they upset Baylor? I mean, then, like, oh, you're 13-0 with a win over Baylor in Memphis and Xavier and Creighton and Iowa?
You got a Memphis in there?
They did beat, they blew out Memphis. It was the first of Memphis's string of embarrassments. They were the first of many to embarrass Memphis this season. I mean, you can make a case. Iowa State should be number one, ranked number one in the country.
If it wins, yeah.
If they win the game, yeah. So here's how to show proper respect to the Drew family and Huck, but also acknowledge Hilton Magic. I think it's going to be a close game. I think that Iowa State is going to be in a one-possession game with Baylor at the under four. And then I think Baylor will win it, you know, in those final 4 minutes. I think Baylor wins a close game, but Iowa State covers. I think I'll take Iowa State plus the seven, but Baylor to wake up Sunday undefeated, at which point we would then have, I believe, three undefeated teams left in college basketball.
That's right. What's next?
Game three, Saturday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Number 22, Villanova at number 15, Seton Hall, inside the Herb Pope Center. That's why I said Herb Pope earlier. He was in my head. I named an arena after him. KenPom has it Villanova minus one. You can watch it on CBS. It's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars.
Parrish and I will be on CBS Sports HQ all throughout Saturday, as a by the way. So if you're watching and if you are one of many who have cut the cord, as they say, and you tend to watch on the streaming, well, go to your CBS Sports app on your smart TV. Parrish and I will be doing some pregame and postgame hits, starting with a game we're not going to be previewing here, but Wichita State against Memphis. We'll be on 11:45 to talk about that. So if you want a little bit more, look for us on CBS Sports HQ all day on New Year's Day as you potentially nurse.
We going ties or no ties?
I'm gonna leave it up to you right now. You make the call. I will do either one. New Year's Day. What do you feel?
Let's go hoodies. What if we both show up in hoodies?
Go in hoodie on HQ.
If we just show up 45 seconds before we go on, what are they gonna do?
And it's true, but I can't go hoodie. I can't go hoodie.
Let's go white t-shirt.
I'm not going white. You said ties or no ties. So I guess no ties technically opens the door for a lot of potential options here.
Let's go tank tops.
All right.
I think ties probably.
All right, we'll go ties. I got all these ties anyway. The way I see it is I got all these ties.
I got a lot of ties.
Might as well put them to use there. Seton Hall, shorthanded. Doesn't have its full allotment of players here. And this is an urgent game for both teams. The Hall gets a home opportunity against Villanova. Villanova had a nice second half performance more than a week ago, week and a half ago, really, against Xavier, and got a good 13-point home win against X there. But Villanova is 8-4 and has losses on the road to UCLA in OT, to Baylor, wasn't competitive whatsoever. I mean, what Baylor did to Villanova, yeah, just been ages, eons since I had seen any team make Villanova look that bad. Basically, since that Oklahoma game in the non-conference like 5 years ago, they lost at Creighton and then lost at Purdue on a neutral. This is also away from home, so I'm interested to see how Villanova looks when it's not in the comfy confines of its home gym. There, I'm gonna go because Seton Hall's shorthanded. Because it's able to play, you know, these new protocols with these conferences are, we're going to get rid of the forfeit stuff, but you got to have at least seven to play and a coach for the most part. Seton Hall is within that threshold, but, you know, asking them to go multiple games by not having the full allotment of important players, I think is significant there. So I will take Villanova on the road in this spot because the line's so small, but I do think it's going to be a close game. I think this has a good chance of actually being the most competitive game of the weekend.
Yeah, I'll take Villanova too. But, you know, I still believe in Villanova. I've got them ranked pretty high in the top 25 and one because, you know, like, you know, getting blown out at Creighton, like, yeah, that shouldn't happen. But, and like getting embarrassed by Baylor, that shouldn't happen. But, like, you know, Baylor's awesome. They were up on Purdue and they were up on UCLA. I think double digits in both of those games. And so they got four losses, but you know, if you can make sense of these two statements, they have four losses, but they've played pretty well. They've just, you know, blown some opportunities against good teams. They did beat Tennessee. They beat Syracuse. They beat Xavier. So there's some good stuff there, some not so great stuff there. I still believe in Villanova. I still think they're good. And, you know, for most of the reasons you stated, I'll trust them to win on the road. But obviously we're talking about a 1-point favorite here. So there's no result that would qualify as a surprise. Seton Hall can obviously win this game. Game four, Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. Number 10, Michigan State at Northwestern. Inside Julia Louis-Dreyfus Arena. KenPom has it Michigan State -1. You can watch it on the Big Ten Network.
Northwestern's 8-2, and
not bad.
Not bad. It's 7-2 against D1 competition. Its most recent game was against Illinois Springfield, an NIA school. And finally, the Wildcats are able to get back on the mend here. They've not played a D1 game. They've had both themselves and opponents have COVID issues. So they've not played a Division I opponent since December 12th when they were able to beat NJIT. So we'll see if they can dust off the cobwebs here. This is a nice Sunday matchup. I think it's got a good shot of Northwestern pulling off a win here. Michigan State's been solid as of late. Jumped into my power rankings on Thursday. And Tom Izzo's team, its only loss since the season opener, came against none other than Baylor in the battle for Atlantis there. And Baylor, as has done every team, basically ran away with it. And it wasn't even a close game. But since then, Michigan State's been able to beat Louisville. It was able to win on the road and give Minnesota its only loss of the season so far to this point. And beat Penn State in Big Ten play earlier in the month. But Michigan State is a team that hasn't had to rest since Christmas. It played earlier this week. It played on Wednesday. It was able to beat High Point by 13 points. And we'll get to Tubby Smith's program in just a minute here. I think I'm going to go there. I think I'm going to take Chris Collins and the Wildcats to do this. By the way, we talked about earlier. I don't think you've been there. We talked about home arenas and size. Northwestern redid its arena like 3-4 years ago. And the dimensions in that is a fantastic, fantastic college arena. And so have you been inside?
I've never been on the campus. I've got some friends who went to school at Northwestern, friends, kids who are, you know, went to school at Northwestern. I've never been on that campus.
Yeah. It's Welsh Ryan Arena. It's just great. They got a really good setup there. Anyone that's been and hears me raving about it knows what I'm talking about. They did a really good job. So yeah, give me Northwestern in a close one. I'll take them to win. And in doing so, I think upgrade their reputation significantly. I think this is an important game for that program to establish itself in the conference and say, listen, we've got a chance to make the NCAA tournament this season. Because going in, I remember doing when I was doing the 1-358. Just checking in with a few coaches around the league. And there was a thought that Northwestern was going to be not only improved, but it would have a chance to be that team that really jumped up and could be in that, you know, 10, 11, 12 seed range once we got to March there. I think winning these kinds of games are important. We don't have any evidence that Michigan State is a bona fide, surefire top 15 team this season, but it is good. It's NCAA tournament bound almost certainly. And so if you're Northwestern, you want to be able to pick off these kind of games at home. And I think they're going to do it. And I'll pick them to win narrowly.
You know, only one of Northwestern's 8 wins is over a top 200 KenPom team as a win over Maryland. So, you know, the losses are Wake Forest and Providence. You know, Providence is good.
And they're close losses.
And they're close. And Wake Forest is good. I think Wake Forest is good. Yes. You know, they nearly won at Louisville the other night. I think Wake Forest is good. And so no bad losses, or at least no humiliating losses, but not much substance in the win column either. That could obviously change with this one. You know, this is year 9 for Chris Collins at Northwestern. Famously made the NCAA tournament in 2017, first time in school history. But since then, been not great. Finished 10th, 14th, 13th, and 12th in the Big Ten standings. So that's in the past 4 seasons. So this could be a bounce back year for him. So far, so good. Michigan State, the only losses, Kansas and Baylor. Do you realize if Dayton doesn't bounce in a shot at the buzzer, your number one teams in the country right now are Kansas and Baylor. It's Kansas 1, Baylor 2, probably.
Yes, for sure.
And so those are the only teams that beat Michigan State. They've gone from, you know, remember, Michigan State was unranked in the preseason. Just barely. They were first in other receiving votes. I did have them in the top 25 and 1, but they were unranked in the AP poll. And now they're in the top 10. got wins over Loyola Chicago, UConn, Louisville. And there was some thought that Max Christie would be their best player. He's having a nice season, but just a nice season. He's only the fourth leading scorer. Gabe Brown has emerged as the leading scorer. Interesting college career. Tell me if you think these types of college careers will ever happen again. And I know they will, but like how common will they be? 6'8 forward. He averaged 2.3 points as a freshman. Probably transferring now. Okay. But then as a sophomore, 6.8. Junior, 7.2. And now as a senior, nearly doubled it. 14.2 points per game, shooting 39.5%. And launching 6.2 threes a game. So he's really emerged as a nice player. Should be noted, you mentioned the win over High Point. Max Christie, Marcus Bingham, neither one played in that game because of COVID issues. But my understanding is that both are expected to be back for this game at Northwestern. So they should be at something, either at full strength or something close to full strength. And I'll take them to win the game. Northwestern has done well for itself so far, but Northwestern hasn't done anything to make me think they will beat Michigan State, although, you know, we're talking about a one-point spread, so they can.
All right, before I get to my fifth, just a few games to give you a heads up on. Saturday, again, Memphis, Wichita State, that's a CBS tip. If Memphis doesn't win, then it's at large case is expired as far as I'm concerned. It would probably literally have to win out to the AAC tournament to have any kind of at-large case. So there's urgency there with the Tigers, and I think Wichita State will win that game. CBS Sports Network, 4 o'clock on Saturday. We'll have 10-4 Boise State at 11-2 Wyoming. Those are a couple of really good teams. Mountain West is actually doing well for itself. So so keep an eye on that one. That's a quality mid-major game. And then on Sunday, good American matchup, UCF-SMU. That's a 2 o'clock ESPNU tip. And then 6 p.m. on Big Ten Network, Illinois will play at Minnesota, which is an under the radar quality game against two teams that have NCAA tournament resumes. And Minnesota, obviously, among the overachievers in the sport. My fifth game is going to be a Saturday tip. It's I think it's the best mid-major game of the weekend, or at least, you know, for me, the most compelling one. And do you know what it is? Did you check the doc? I put it in, but I think you might not have seen it on the doc.
It's on the screen right in front of me. I'm going to say it's San Francisco at St. Mary's.
Can I introduce the game? Okay.
I mean, it's just standard. It's like, you literally said, do you know? And so I answered you. All I did was answer your question.
8 o'clock.
You asked me a question.
Pac-12 Network for all
hey,
I know.
Sorry, dead leg, for answering the question you asked me.
8 o'clock. I don't have a TV station for this one. Why don't you tell them what channel is it on, Parrish?
I think it's probably on Pac-12 Network.
All right, then let's just roll with that one. San Francisco, 13-1 at St. Mary's on Omar Samhan Court.
Love him.
Classic.
Reminds me of Amari Bailey's mom a little bit.
Let's not even go there.
He's
San Francisco is coached by Todd Golden, who attended St. Mary's. St. Mary's is favored by 4 in this game. This is the 32nd team at KenPom. San Francisco at the 31st team in KenPom. St. Mary's, who you got?
I'm compelled to go with the Dons.
Dons are good.
+4. Give me +4. You give me the Dons +4. The Pac-12 Network should try to get some WCC games.
Why not, right?
Why not?
Can't hurt. You're going to go with the Dons. You're going to go with the Dons. I, too, will go with the Dons in this game. If trivia time.
Okay, what?
If San Francisco wins this game, it's going to be 14-1. It's been receiving votes in the AP Top 25 for a while. By the way, someone mentioned this in the chat early on. You have given up the poll tax column, and
it's outrageous. I could kill somebody every week. It's so stupid.
You really could, but man, it feels like it's been worse than ever this year. Okay. The guard has left the gate, and now the inmates are running the asylum. There's some bad stuff on a weekly basis. People that just are paid to cover this sport. And, you know, they might be covering the CFP semis this weekend. And so they're not exactly up on it, but I'm just telling you.
They always make excuses. It's like, oh, we had a busy football weekend. It's like football's over. Then it's like, oh, well, you know, so it's all. I get up every morning and ranked 26 basketball teams. And I can honestly think of one time where I actually made a mistake. Like, oh God, that team lost yesterday and I forgot to drop them. And the one time I did it, it was literally my birthday. We went out for dinner and stayed out way too late the night of my birthday. And then I had to wake up the next morning and I was a little foggy headed, as they say. I was unplugged for a little while. And that's the only time I can ever remember making a mistake. These dum-dums, some of them, not all of them. I'm not trying to disparage all AP voters, but too many of them make the same ridiculous mistakes over and over again. Did you see this week? Colorado got 5 points in the AP poll. Do you want to know why? Because some voters clearly thought they were voting for Colorado State.
Yeah.
It's the only explanation. That stuff happens all the time. It's outrageous. Like, you don't get paid to do the AP poll. You don't have to do it. If you can't, like, put in the – honestly, it takes – if you can't pay
– Yeah, I'm wondering if there's, like, a drag-down menu situation and they're meaning to click – it's not acceptable. I'm just saying. Like, I'm wondering if they drop down menu and it's Colorado than Colorado State, and they got a slippery finger and they
just you know what? Then be more careful. If your fingers are slippery, then be more careful with your slippery fingers. It's just one excuse after another with these people.
It's
why I started writing the stupid column to begin with. If you don't have time to do it, just decline the opportunity to do it. Just say, you know what? I'm too busy. But if you're going to do something, do it right. I don't understand. I talk to my kids about this all the time. I don't understand people who don't want to take the time to do something right. If you're going to do something, do it right. It'd be like me showing up for this podcast and I haven't even thought about anything. And I'm just like, hey, everybody, Leaky Black, Dodo Birds, and nothing.
Welcome to 2015.
I'm here. I'm here. I know exactly what we're going to do. From the first minute to the last minute.
Well, and then we're gonna, I don't know exactly.
Well, no. And then we're going to weave in and out and get off track. But I know exactly where we're going.
We're going to weave. I got a trivia time I've been waiting to ask you here. I knew I was going to get you going. I shouldn't have done that. Trivia
time. If you don't have time to do the job right, don't do it. Or if you really wake up on Monday morning and you're like, oh, my God, I haven't even thought about this. Go get the top 25 and one and copy it and just send it in. Just trust me. Trust, if you can't trust yourself, trust me.
Plagiarize.
Go ahead. Plagiarize. It's better than what you've been doing. Colorado's 82nd at KenPom, lost to Southern Illinois. They're 9-3. Best wins over Stanford. They got 5 points in this week's AP poll. Only because people thought confused them. People confused them with Colorado State. That's silly stuff. Stop doing all the silly stuff.
If San Francisco wins at St. Mary's, it's probably, at least it better, break into the AP Top 25. When was the last time, the last year, San Francisco was ranked in the AP Top 25?
Silvio D'Souza.
Give me a guess. What year do you think it was?
Oh, yeah. San Francisco was last ranked. 1968.
It's a legitimate guess. 1982.
82. I get 68 and 82 confused sometimes.
82 was the last year that the Dons were ranked, so look out for that. All right, as we wrap, a couple of things here. First of all, Paris mentioned Colorado. I know we have listeners in that part of the country, and the scenes that are coming out of the greater Boulder area obviously are devastating, frightening. This is now the second time this month that we are seeing climate activity in this country that we just straight up didn't grow up with. You're not supposed to have wildfires after Christmas in the month of December anywhere. It should not be happening. Nada has actually dropped a link in the chat to where local officials have actually put up a website where you can donate. There have been hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of families that have lost their homes to wildfires.
And not just their homes. Everything.
Everything. Everything. There was a Colorado football assistant, a linebackers coach, who posted to Twitter late on Thursday that he lost everything. I checked in with the Colorado staff late Thursday night. Thankfully, they were okay. But as Tad Boyle told me, a lot of people are not. So everyone in that part of the country, you are obviously in our thoughts. And yeah, not if we could even toss this link into the episode description, because obviously the majority of people listening to this podcast are going to be listening to it after the fact and aren't watching the live stream on YouTube in real time. And if they'd like to go and donate, please, this will be millions and millions and millions of dollars in damages here. And these wildfires are just devastating to see. It's the same effect that we saw in the western part of Kentucky, and the college sports industry, and obviously the communities who did so much to help that part of the country and rally and donate. So let's try and make sure we do the same there. Again, sincerely, our thoughts are with you. This is a devastating thing that's happening, and you know, right on the cusp of New Year's Eve, it's just horrible. So you can also look to donate with the American Red Cross, who immediately helps in these kind of situations. So I wanted to alert our listeners to there. And if anyone's listening that's in that part of the country, please know you have our love and support. Elsewhere, just wanted to give a shout to John Calipari in Kentucky, because Tubby Smith, High Point coach, he's going to be honored. This was a great thing. We mentioned this earlier in the season when it got mentioned. This is happening on Friday here. Kentucky is hosting High Point. Tubby Smith obviously took Kentucky to a national championship in his first season there in 1998. The game is tipping within an hour here as we record live. So if you're getting to this later, the game's already happened. But High Point at Kentucky, and Tubby Smith will be honored at Rupp Arena, which I think is just an awesome, awesome, awesome move. I'm so thrilled that this game is going to be played and didn't have to get pushed or canceled because of COVID, because Tubby Smith absolutely deserves this. And you talk about a coach who got, I think, more flack than he deserved. That was really, that was before social media, but man, oh man, Tubby Smith was, he was just, he was a coach on the hot seat. And this is before I was even covering the sport nationally, but you just knew if you followed the sport, like Tubby Smith went like six straight years of being on the hot seat at Kentucky. And then once they parted ways, they quickly realized, you know, just simply replacing coaches at Kentucky is not so simple when they brought in Billy Gillespie there. But he's getting a great moment on Friday here, and good on Calipari for making sure to make that happen. So, yeah, I just wanted to be sure to bring that up as we wrap the pod.
John's good about trying to give credit to, you know, people who he thinks maybe don't get enough of it. And clearly Tubby Smith is that within that part of his career as the Kentucky head coach. You know, he won a national championship in year one. And then even some people were, I don't want to say dismissive of that, but discounted it by saying, yeah, but it was with Rick Pitino's players. Because Rick won it in 96 and then I think went to the title game in 97. And then Tubby takes over and, you know, he's got, you know, a lot of those players and they win it in 98. I mean, it is true that it was some of Rick's players, but like, Tubby coached that team, and that's Tubby's national championship. After that, never went back to the Final Four, but he did go to the NCAA tournament 10 straight times. Like, you know, John Calipari hadn't done that at Kentucky. One of the things I've always said is that if you are the coach at Kentucky for 10 years, you've done a great job, because you can't keep that job for 10 years. And when I got the job at CBS, it was July 2006. So as it turns out, just before the start of Tubby's last year at Kentucky. And I remember, you're right, it was pre-social media, but it wasn't pre-YouTube. And there was this white guy, for lack of a better word, redneck, who would like put pictures of Tubby Smith like up on a target and then like shoot at him with a rifle. And I can remember, like, wow, you know, seeing these videos and laughing at them. Oh, isn't that funny? And with the benefit of hindsight and perhaps age and maturity, it wasn't funny. It was ugly. I mean, it was reprehensible. It's not the type of thing that would be laughed about in the year 2021. But that was real stuff that happened. I mean, it got very, very ugly with that fan base. As it related to Tubby Smith, you know, I think some could probably argue it got a little racist, maybe a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't have to gloss over the fact that Tubby wasn't doing well at the end. I mean, he went 9-7 in the SEC in back-to-back seasons. You know, any SEC coach, any Kentucky coach who does that is going to find himself facing criticism. But with Tubby, it just got, a little more intense than it probably should have gotten. It seemed to be a little bit more about than just his ability to coach a basketball team or run a basketball program. And as I wrote in the lead to the top 25 and one on Friday morning, you know, time has a way of healing these things. I mean, on the day Nolan Richardson was fired at Arkansas, could you have ever imagined Nolan Richardson going back to Arkansas and being celebrated? It would have been hard. But now, you know, that court's named after him. He goes back to Bud Walton. They love him. He loves them. That's the way it should be. He did amazing things there. And, with time, Bob Huggins and Indiana have gotten to a better place. Not quite that place, but better place. He's been back in the building. Time has a way of taking the emotion out of it and giving people time to properly reflect. And I know as Tubby left there, because, by the way, he was not fired at Kentucky. He left for Minnesota. He left Kentucky for Minnesota. And it was because, like, at some point, you just don't want to live like that anymore. You know, you don't want to live like that anymore.
That's why Mark Turgeon stepped down in the middle of the season, by the way.
Same stuff. Just like, it's not fun. Yeah. Like, I don't want to speak for Mark, but like he had been ripped of his ability to enjoy doing his job. Whether you think that's right or wrong, whatever, I'm just telling you that's how he felt. He felt like he could not enjoy his job anymore. And so he walked away. And that's the way life got for Tubby at Kentucky. And so he went to Minnesota, and they were glad to see him go. And then Billy Gillespie was not great, but now they got John Calipari. So, you know, they're fine. But I know Kentucky fans didn't make him feel appreciated as he left, and that's because of all of the emotions involved and the circumstances under which he left. But I do love that he'll get to enjoy that. His family will get to experience that, as we're speaking, you know, in about 40 minutes or so. 30 minutes or so, because they deserve that. Perhaps it's true that he didn't do enough great things at Kentucky, but he did a lot of good things. He ran a consistently good program for a decade. And I know anybody who listens to my radio show might find it odd that I would be speaking this way about Tubby Smith, considering when he was the head coach of Memphis, I was the first one to ever yell it, and the one who yelled it most consistently. You have to end this with Tubby Smith. I was suggesting end it after year one, and I screamed so loud end it after year two that it created enough momentum. In some ways, it created enough momentum to get that done. He was fired at Memphis after 2 years. And because, again, both these things can be true. Tubby Smith has had an amazing career. He was a disaster at Memphis. It was a terrible fit. But I will tell you, and I only tell this story because I do think it speaks to who Tubby Smith is. In his second season, it was not going well, as anybody could have predicted. And I was on the radio every day talking about they've got to fire Tubby Smith. Like, they cannot do a third year of this. There's no reason to think year three will be any different than year two. And attendance has plummeted to nothing. I mean, they were getting 1,100 people for games and 18,000 NBA arena. It was bad, bad, bad. Not just on the court, but like losing tons of money that they cannot afford to lose. Every day I'm on the radio talking about fire Tubby Smith, fire Tubby Smith. Got to fire Tubby Smith. You got to move on. And then, of course, I'm doing sidelines, CBS Sports Network, on a Memphis game. And the way that works is you got to go to a shoot around day of the game. So now suddenly, for the first time in a while, I'm going to be face-to-face with this man who I've been saying every day needs to be fired. And, you know, you're a big boy. You show up and you look him in the eye because, you know, if you're going to say something, I've always believed you should have the whatever it takes to stand in front of him and show your face. And so, like, there I was. But if I'm telling the truth, I felt awkward. I felt a little, not nervous, but, I mean, I didn't think he was going to try to fight me or anything. But, like, I had been yelling, fire this man, for 6 months straight. So he walks in to shoot around. And just recently, there had been an article written about my youngest son and the circumstances under which he was born. For people who don't know, he was a high-risk baby. We were actually advised by our doctors to terminate the pregnancy for the health of my wife and under the idea that the baby had almost no chance of surviving. And we declined to do that and decided we'd just see it through. And he was premature and was in a NICU for, you know, a while, but like he's 5 years old now and he's awesome. And so the hospital that delivered him, where he was delivered, you know, they have used this story, our story, to, you know, to tell a story about their hospital and all of the great things that happened there. And a story had recently been written, and I didn't know Tubby Smith had read it, but he clearly had. So contrast these two things. For 6 months, I've been yelling fire Tubby Smith. And he walks in the shoot around, and he walks straight to me. Not to his players, not to his coaches, not to Pete Gillen. He walks straight to me. And I'm like, see it kind of, it's like in slow motion. I'm like, oh God. Reaches his hand out and he says, how's Louie doing? He said, I just read about him. What a miracle. Told my wife about him. So happy for you guys. And it just makes you feel like garbage because of the way the thing, it didn't mean that what I'd said was untrue, but like, boy, it'll make you feel, you know, I just had one of those, I walked out of there feeling like, you know, God, that maybe this is who I am and that's who he is. Because there's no scenario where I would be that thoughtful towards somebody who was trashing my job performance every day. And yet he's just a decent man. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. He's a decent man. He hasn't been a great fit everywhere he's coached, but he's had an amazing career and he was really good at Kentucky. And I'm glad he and his family are going to get to have that experience inside Rupp Arena. And I can appreciate John Calipari working to make it happen. Because unless John wants this to happen, it just doesn't happen.
Thanks for that story, GP. The game is now over. Kentucky has defeated High Point 86-71. So that was a great win for Kentucky. Now it's a wonderful, wonderful story. Everyone have a safe and happy new year. Enjoy the college football playoff semifinals, which frankly feel like they're sneaking up on us. But given that many of us will be staying home for a variety of reasons tonight, I'm kind of loving the fact that we're getting these games on New Year's Eve to kind of occupy the time there. But yes, have a safe and happy new year. Reminder, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Nada has produced a year in review video that is on the channel. So be sure to go and find that. Again, it's not in the podcast feed. It's only on the YouTube channel. So please subscribe. Apparently, we are just a handful away. We're 8 to 10 subscriptions away from hitting our December goal. So if you could do that for us, thank you again for an amazing 2021. You guys have helped make this podcast grow. And yeah, man, this is the last of it. I don't know if 2022 is going to be dumber than 21, because 21 was dumber than 20.
I'm looking really forward to 2023. I feel like 2023 is going to be a real bounce back year for us.
Okay, but 2022, you don't have any hope.
Not getting off to a great start, Deadleg. Okay. You can acknowledge we're not off to a great start.
We're not there yet. I mean, we're there in Australia, so I guess the listeners in Australia can certainly indicate what the start is like.
Got record COVID numbers and wildfires wiping out Boulder, Colorado. What are we doing?
I know. Not good. As we wrap, my wife asked me this morning if I had any New Year's resolutions. And I usually do, but I don't have any yet. I got to think on it. You got any New Year's resolutions?
I want to ride my Peloton more.
Okay.
I want to get awesome at golf.
I think that's been your...
These are always my New Year's resolutions. I want to ride my Peloton more and be awesome at golf.
Yeah. All right.
I'd like to eat 5 pieces of pizza and still be skinny like you.
I know our listeners have resolutions to continue to subscribe to the YouTube channel, rate us 5 stars on the platform of your choice, and even if you don't listen on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a review. Who else? Listen, we were the first college podcast to ever go to video on YouTube. Just a fact. Okay? We're here for you on New Year's Eve. We're going to be back on Sunday night to recap the weekend. And, you know, just let us know that you're there for us, because we try and be there for you and we appreciate you much. Let's get out. Oh, and it's New Year's Eve. Let's get out.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Roderick Miller, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Sincerely, thank you guys once again for listening to Iron College Basketball Podcast, Dumbest Pandemic My Lifetime. What in the world is going on? What's going on? What is going on, Deadleg? I never seen one like this.
Hey.
I never seen one like this. Yeah. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. 5 stars at both places. Leave nice comments. Smash the like button on YouTube. Brandon Davies would do it. Wonder what Brandon Davies trying to get into tonight, New Year's Eve. I bet I know. Bet you $5 I don't.
Let's go.
I know what Brandon Davies is trying to get into. I wish him luck. We're going to talk to you again on Sunday night.
That's right.
That'll be January 2nd, 2022. Looking forward to it already. Till then, take care.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.